The door to Magrat's room was opened by Millie Chillum, the maid, who curtsied to Agnes, or at least to her hat, and then left her alone with the Queen, who was at her dressing table. Agnes wasn't sure of the protocol, but tried a sort of Republican curtsy. This caused considerable movement in outlying regions. Queen Magrat of Lancre blew her nose and stuffed the hanky up the sleeve of her dressing gown.
"Oh, hello, Agnes," she said. "Take a seat, do. You don't have to bob up and down like that. Millie does it all the time and I get seasick. Anyway, strictly speaking, witches bow."
Agnes began. She glanced at the crib in the corner. It had more loops and lace than any piece of furniture should.
"She's asleep," said Magrat. "Oh, the crib. Verence ordered it all the way from Ankh-Morpork. I said the old one they'd always used was fine, but he's very, you know, modern. Please, sit down."
"You wanted me, Your Majesty,"
Agnes began, still uncertain. It was turning out to be a very complicated evening, and she wasn't sure even now how she felt about Magrat. The woman had left echoes of herself in the cottage. An old bangle lost under the bed. Rather soppy notes in some of the ancient notebooks. Vases full of desiccated flowers. You can build up a very strange view of someone via the things they leave behind the dresser.
"I just wanted a little talk," said Magrat. "It's a bit... Look, I'm really very happy, but, well, Millie's nice, but she agrees with me all the time. And Nanny and Granny still treat me as if I wasn't, well, you know, queen and everything. Not that I want to be treated as queen all the time, but, well, you know, I want them to know I'm queen, but not treat me as one, if you see what I mean."
"I think so," said Agnes carefully.
Magrat waved her hands in an effort to describe the indescribable. Used handkerchiefs cascaded out of her sleeves.
"I mean, I get dizzy with people bobbing up and down all the time, so when they see me, I like them to think, 'Oh, there's Magrat. She's queen now, but I shall treat her in a perfectly normal way.'"
"But perhaps just a little more politely, because she is queen, after all," Agnes suggested.
"Well, yes, exactly. Actually, Nanny's not too bad. At least she treats everyone the same all the time. But when Granny looks at me, you can see her thinking, 'Oh, there's Magrat, make the tea, Magrat.' One day I swear I'll make a very cutting remark. It's as if they think I'm doing this as a hobby."
"I do know what you mean.
It's as if they think I'm going to get it out of my system and go back to witching again. They wouldn't say that, of course, but that's what they think. They really don't believe there's any other sort of life."
"That's true.
How's the old cottage?"
"There's a lot of mice," said Agnes.
"Oh, no, I used to feed them. Don't tell Granny. She is here, isn't she?"
"Haven't seen her yet," said Agnes.
She'll be waiting for a dramatic moment," said Magrat. "And you know what? I've never caught her actually waiting for a dramatic moment. Not in all the, well, things we've been involved in. I mean, if it was you or me, we'd be hanging around in the hall or something. But she just walks in, and it's the right time."
"She says you make your own right time," said Agnes.
"Yes," said Magrat.
"Yes," said Agnes.
"And you say she's not here yet? It was the first card we did."
Magrat leaned closer. "Verence got them to put extra gold leaf on it. I'm amazed it doesn't go clang when she puts it down.
How are you at making the tea?"
"They always complain," said Agnes.
"Oh, they do, don't they? 3 lumps of sugar for Nanny Og, right?
It's not as if they even give me tea money," said Agnes. She sniffed.
There was a slight mustiness to the air.
"It's not worth baking biscuits, I can tell you that," said Magrat. "I used to spend hours doing fancy ones with crescent moons and so on. You might just as well get them from the shop."
She sniffed too.
"That's not the baby," she said. "I'm sure Sean Ogg's been so busy arranging things he hasn't had time to clean up the privy pit in the last 2 weeks. The smell comes right up the garderobe in the gong tower when the wind gusts. I've tried hanging up fragrant herbs, but they sort of dissolve."
She looked uncertain, as if a worse prospect than lax castle sanitation had crossed her mind.
She must have got the invitation, mustn't she?"
"Sean says he delivered it," said Agnes.
"And she probably said," and her voice changed, becoming clipped and harsh, "'I can't be having with that at my time of life. I've never been one to put myself forward. No one could ever say I'm one to put myself forward.'"
Magrat's mouth was an O of amazement.
"That's
so like her, it's frightening, she said. It's one of the few things I'm good at, said Agnes in her normal voice. Big hair, a wonderful personality, and an ear for sounds. And two minds, Perdita added. She'll come anyway, Agnes went on, ignoring the inner voice. But it's gone 11:30. Good grief, I'd better get dressed. Can you give me a hand? She hurried into the dressing room with Agnes tagging along behind. I even wrote a bit underneath asking her to be a godmother, she said, sitting down in front of the mirror and scrabbling among the debris of makeup. She's always secretly wanted to be one. Phew, that's something to wish on a child, said Agnes without thinking. Magrat's hand stopped halfway to her face, in a little cloud of powder, and Agnes saw her horrified look in the mirror. Then the jaw tightened, and for a moment, the Queen had just the same expression that Granny sometimes employed. Well, if it was a choice of wishing a child health, wealth, and happiness, or Granny Weatherwax being on her side, I know which I'd choose, said Magrat. You must have seen her in action.
Once or twice, yes, Agnes conceded.
"'She'll never be beaten,' said Magrat. "'You wait till you see her when she's in a tight corner. "'She's got that way of putting part of herself somewhere safe. "'It's as if she gives herself to someone else to keep hidden for a while. "'It's all part of that borrowing stuff she does.' "'Agnes nodded. "'Nanny had warned her about it, "'but even so it was unnerving to turn up at Granny's cottage "'and find her stretched out on the floor, as stiff as a stick, "'and holding in fingers that were almost blue, a card.' With the words,
I ain't dead.
When there was nothing much else to occupy her time, Granny Weatherwax sent her mind borrowing, letting it piggyback inside the heads of other creatures. She was widely accepted as the most skilled exponent of the art that the Ramtops had seen for centuries, being practically able to get inside the minds of things that didn't even have minds. The practice meant, among other things, that Lankra people were less inclined towards the casual cruelty to animals that is a general feature of the rural idyll, on the basis that the rat you throw a brick at today might turn out to be the witch you need some toothache medicine from tomorrow. It also meant that people calling on her unexpectedly would find her stretched out, apparently cold and lifeless, heart and pulse barely beating. The sign had saved a lot of embarrassment. It just meant that she was out in the world somewhere, seeing life through the eyes of a badger or a pigeon, riding as an unheeded passenger in its mind.
And you know what, Magrat went on, it's just like those magicians in her wonderland who keep their heart hidden in a jar somewhere for safety so they can't be killed. There's something about it in a book at the cottage.
Wouldn't have to be a big jar, said Agnes.
That wasn't fair, said Magrat. She paused. Well, not fair for most of the time. Often, anyway. Sometimes, at least. Can you help me with this bloody ruff?
There was a gurgle from the cradle.
What name are you giving her? Said Agnes.
You'll have to wait, said Magrat.
It made some sort of sense, Agnes admitted, as she followed Magrat and the maids into the hall. In Lankra, you named children at midnight so that they started a day with a new name. She didn't know why it made sense. It just felt as though once someone had found that it worked. Lancrastians never threw anything away that worked. The trouble was, they seldom changed anything that worked, either. She'd heard that this was depressing King Verence, who was teaching himself kinging out of books. His plans for better irrigation and agriculture were warmly applauded by the people of Lankra, who then did nothing about them. Nor did they take any notice of his scheme for sanitation, i.e. that there should be some, since the Lancrastian idea of posh sanitation was a non-slippery path to the privy and a mail-order catalogue with really soft pages. They'd agreed to the idea of a royal society for the betterment of mankind, but since this largely consisted of as much time as Sean Ogg had to spare on Thursday afternoons, mankind was safe from too much betterment for a while. Although Sean had invented draft excluders for some of the windier parts of the castle, for which the king had awarded him a small medal. The people of Lankra wouldn't dream of living in anything other than a monarchy. They'd done so for thousands of years and knew that it worked. But they'd also found that it didn't do to pay too much attention to what the king wanted, because there was bound to be another king along in 40 years or so, and he'd be certain to want something different. And so they'd have gone to all that trouble for nothing. In the meantime, his job, as they saw it, was to mostly stay in the palace, practice the waving, have enough sense to face the right way on coins, and let them get on with the ploughing, sowing, growing, and harvesting. It was, as they saw it, a social contract. They did what they always did, and he let them. that sometimes he kinged. In Lancre Castle, King Verence looked at himself in the mirror and sighed.
Mrs. Ogg, he said, adjusting his crown, I have, as you know, great respect for the witches of Lancre, but this is, with respect, broadly a matter of general policy, which I respectfully submit, is a matter for the king.
He adjusted the crown again, while Spriggins the butler brushed his robe.
We must be tolerant, really, Mrs. Ogg. I haven't seen you in a state like this before.
They go round setting fire to people, said Nanny, annoyed at all the respect.
Used to, I believe, said Verence.
And it was witches they burned.
Verence removed his crown and polished it with his sleeve in an infuriatingly reasonable manner.
I've always understood they set fire to practically everybody, he said. But that was some time ago, wasn't it?
Our Jason heard them preaching once down in Orhulan, and they say he was saying some very nasty things about witches, said Nanny.
Sadly, not everyone knows witches like we do, said Verence,
with what Nanny in her overheated state thought was unnecessary diplomacy.
And our Wayne said they tries to turn folk against other religions, she went on. Since they opened up that mission of theirs, even the Offlarians have upped sticks and gone. I mean, it's one thing saying you've got the best God, but saying it's the only real one is a bit of a cheek, in my opinion. I know where I can find at least two any day of the week, and they say everyone starts out bad and only gets good by believing in Om, which is frankly damn nonsense. I mean, look at your little girl. What's her name going to be now?
Everyone will know in 20 minutes, Nanny, said Verence smoothly.
Ha!
Nanny's tone made it clear that Radio Og disapproved of this news management.
Well, look, the worst she could put her little hand up to her age is a few grubby nappies and keeping you awake at night. That's hardly sinful to my mind.
But you never objected to the gloomy brethren, Nanny, or to the wanderers. And the balancing monks came through here all the time.
But none of them object to me, said Nanny.
Verence turned. He was finding this disconcerting. He knew Nanny Ogg very well, but mainly as the person standing just behind Granny Weatherwax and smiling a lot. It was hard to deal with an angry Ogg.
I really think you're taking this too much to heart, Mrs. Ogg, he said.
Granny Weatherwax won't like it,
Nanny played the trump card. To her horror, it didn't seem to have the desired effect.
Granny Weatherwax isn't king, Mrs. Ogg, said Verence. And the world is changing. There is a new order. Once upon a time, trolls were monsters that ate people, but now, thanks to the endeavours of men and, of course, trolls, of goodwill and peaceful intent, we get along very well, and I hope we understand each other. This is no longer a time when little kingdoms need only worry about little concerns. We're part of a big world. We have to play that part. For example, what about the Muntab question?
Nanny Ogg asked the Muntab question.
Where the hell's Muntab? She said.
Several thousand miles away, Mrs. Ogg. But it has ambitions hubwards, and if there's war with Borogravia, we will certainly have to adopt a position.
This one's several thousand miles away. Looks fine by me, said Nanny. And I don't see...
I'm afraid you don't, said Verence. Nor should you have to. But affairs in distant countries can suddenly end up close to home.
If Clatch sneezes,
Ankh-Morpork catches a cold.
We have to pay attention.
Are we always to be part of the Ankh-Morpork hegemony? Are we not in a unique position as we reach the end of the century of the fruit bat? The country's widdershins of the Ramtops are beginning to make themselves felt. The werewolf economies, as the patrician in Ankh-Morpork calls them. New powers are emerging. Old countries are blinking in the sunlight of the dawning millennium. And of course we have to maintain friendships with all blocks, and so on. Despite a turbulent past, Omnia is a friendly country. Or at least, he admitted, I'm sure they would be friendly if they knew about Lancre. Being unpleasant to the priests of its state religion will serve us no good purpose. I'm sure we will not regret it.
Let's hope we won't, said Nanny.
She gave Verence a withering look.
And I remember you when you were just a man in a funny hat.
Even this didn't work. Verence merely sighed again and turned towards the door.
I still am, Nanny, he said. It's just that this one's a lot heavier. And now I must go. Otherwise we shall be keeping our guests waiting. Ah, Sean. Sean Ogg had appeared at the door. He saluted. How's the army coming along, Sean?
I've nearly finished the knife, sir.
It was obvious to King Verence that even if every adult were put under arms, the kingdom of Lancre would still have a very small and insignificant army, and he'd therefore look for other ways to put it on the military map. Sean had come up with the idea of the Lancrastian army knife, containing a few essential tools and utensils for the soldier in the field, and research and development work had been going on for some months now. One reason for the slow progress was that the king himself was taking an active interest in the country's only defence project, and Sean was receiving little notes up to 3 times every day with further suggestions for improvement. Generally, they were on the lines of a device possibly quite small for finding things that are lost, or a curiously shaped hook-like thing of many uses. Sean diplomatically added some of them, but lost as many notes as he dared, lest he design the only pocket knife on wheels.
"Just got to do the nose-hair tweezers and the folding saw, sir. But actually, I'm here as herald at the moment, sir."
"Ah, it must be time."
"Yes, sir."
"A shorter fanfare this time, Sean, I think," said the King. "While I personally appreciate your skill, an occasion like this calls for something a little simpler than several bars of pink hedgehog rag."
"Yes, sir."
"Let us go, then."
They went out into the main passage just as Magrat's group was passing, and the king took her hand. Nanny Ogg trailed after them. The king was right, in a way. She did feel unusual, ill-tempered and snappish, as if she'd put on a vest that was too tight. Well, Granny would be here soon enough, and she knew how to talk to kings. You needed a special technique for that, Nanny reasoned. For example, you couldn't say things like, "Who died and made you king?" because they'd know. "You and whose army?" was another difficult one, although in this case Verence's army consisted of Sean and a troll, and was unlikely to be a serious threat to Sean's own mother if he wanted to be allowed to eat his tea indoors. She pulled Agnes to one side as the procession reached the top of the big staircase, and Sean went on ahead.
"We'll get a good view from the minstrel gallery," she hissed, dragging Agnes into the king oak structure just as the trumpet began the royal fanfare. "That's my boy," she added proudly when the final flourish caused a stir.
"Yes, not many royal fanfares end with shave and a haircut, no legs," said Agnes, the leitmotif of the Guild of Barber Surgeons.
"Puts people at their ease, though," said Sean's loyal mum.
Agnes looked down at the throng and caught sight of the priest again. He was moving through the press of guests.
"I found him, Nanny," she said. "He didn't make it hard, I must say. He won't try anything in a crowd, will he?"
"Which one is it?"
Agnes pointed. Nanny stared and then turned to her.
"Sometimes I think the weight of that damned crown is turning Verence's head," she said.
"I reckon he really doesn't know what he's letting into the kingdom.
When Esme gets here, she's going to go through this priest like cabbage soup."
By now, the guests had got themselves sorted out on either side of the red carpet that began at the bottom of the stairs. Agnes glanced up at the royal couple waiting awkwardly, just out of sight, for the appropriate moment to descend, and thought, "Granny Weatherwax says you make your own right time. They're the royal family. All they need to do is walk down the stairs, and it'd be the right time. They're doing it wrong." Several of the Lancre guests were glancing at the big double doors, shut for this official ceremony. They'd be thrown open later for the more public and enjoyable part, but right now they looked like doors that would soon creak back and frame a figure against the firelight. She could see the image so clearly. The exercises Granny had reluctantly given her were working, Perdita thought. There was a hurried conversation among the royal party, and then Millie hurried back up the stairs and towards the witches.
The Queen says, is Granny Weatherwax coming or not?" she panted.
"Of course she is," said Nanny.
"Only, well, the King's getting a bit upset. He said it did say RSVP on the invitation," said Millie, trying not to meet Nanny eye to eye.
"Oh, witches never reserve ups," said Nanny. "They just come."
Millie put her hand in front of her mouth and gave a nervous little cough. She glanced wretchedly towards Magrat, who was making frantic hand signals.
"Only, well, the Queen says we'd better not hold things up, so would you be godmother, Mrs. Ogg?"
The wrinkles doubled on Nanny's face as she smiled.
"Tell you what," she said brightly,
I'll come and sort of stand in until Granny gets here, shall I?
Once again, Granny Weatherwax paced up and down in the Spartan greyness of her kitchen. Occasionally, she'd glance at the floor. There was quite a gap under the door, and sometimes things could be blown anywhere. But she'd already searched a dozen times. She must have got the cleanest floor in the country by now. Anyway, it was too late. Even so, Überwald. On the rare maps of the Ramtops that existed, it was spelt Überwald. But Lancre people had never got the hang of accents, and certainly didn't agree with trying to balance two dots on another letter, where they'd only roll off and cause unnecessary punctuation. She strode up and down a few more times.
"I'll be blowed if I'll give 'em the satisfaction," she muttered.
She sat down in her rocking chair, stood up again so quickly that the chair almost fell over, and went back to the pacing.
"I mean, I've never been the kind of person to put myself forward," she said to the air. "I'm not the sort to go where I'm not welcome, I'm sure."
She went to make a cup of tea, fumbling with the kettle with shaking hands, and dropped the lid of her sugar bowl, breaking it. A light caught her eye. The half-moon was visible over the lawn.
"Anyway, it's not as if I've not got other things to do," she said. "Can't all be rushing off to parties the whole time. Wouldn't have gone anyway."
She found herself flouncing around the corners of the floor again and thought, if I'd found it, the Whatley boy would have knocked at an empty cottage. I'd have gone and enjoyed myself, and John Ivy'd be sitting alone now. Drat! That was the worst part about being good. It caught you coming and going. She landed in the rocking chair again and pulled her shawl around her against the chill. She hadn't kept the fire in. She hadn't expected to be at home tonight. Shadows filled the corners of the room, but she couldn't be bothered to light the lamp. The candle would have to do. As she rocked, glaring at the wall, the shadows lengthened. Agnes followed Nanny down into the hall. She probably wasn't meant to, but very few people will argue with a hat of authority. Small countries were normal along this part of the Ramtops. Every glacial valley separated from its neighbours by a route that required a scramble or at worst a ladder, more or less ruled itself. There seemed to Agnes to be any number of kings, even if some of them did their ruling in the evenings after they'd milked the cows. A lot of them were here because a free meal is not to be sneezed at. There were also some senior dwarfs from Copperhead, and standing well away from them, a group of trolls. They weren't carrying weapons, so Agnes assumed they were politicians. Trolls weren't strictly subjects of King Verence, but they were there to say, in official body language, that playing football with human heads was something no one did anymore. Much. Hardly at all, really.
Not round here, certainly. There's practically a law against it.
The witches were ushered into the area in front of the thrones, and then Millie scurried away. The Omnian priest nodded at them.
"Good, evening," he said, and completely failed to set fire to anyone.
He wasn't very old and had a rather ripe boil beside his nose. Inside, Agnes purred at her, made a face at him. Nanny Ogg grunted. Agnes risked a brief smile. The priest blew his nose noisily.
"You must be some of these, witches I've heard so much about," he said.
He had an amazing smile. It appeared on his face as if someone had operated a shutter. One moment it wasn't there, the next moment it was, and then it was gone.
Yes, said Agnes.
"Ha!" said Nanny Ogg, who could haughtily turn her back on people while looking them in the eye. "And I am,
said the priest. He stopped and pinched the bridge of his nose.
"Oh, I am sorry. The mountain air doesn't agree with me. I am the Quite Reverend Mightily Oates."
"You are?" said Agnes. To her amazement, the man began to redden. The more she looked at him, the more she realized that he wasn't much older than she was.
"That is, mightily praiseworthy are ye who exalteth Om Oates," he said. "It's much shorter in Omnian, of course. Have you by any chance heard the word of Om?"
"Which one? Fire?" said Nanny Ogg.
"Ha!"
The nascent religious war was abruptly cut short by the first official royal fanfare to end with a few bars from the Hedgehog Cakewalk. The royal couple began to descend the stairs.
"And we'll have none of your heathen ways, thank you very much," muttered Nanny Ogg behind the pastor. "No sloshing water or oil or sand around or cutting any bits off, and if I hears a single word I understand, well, I'm standing behind you with a pointy stick."
Lonker people considered that anything religious that wasn't said in some ancient and incomprehensible speech probably wasn't the genuine article. From the other side, he heard, "He's not some kind of horrible inquisitor, Nanny."
"But my pointy stick's still a pointy stick, Miguel."
"What's got into her?" Agnes thought, watching the pastor's ears turn red. "That's the way Granny would act." Perdita added, "Perhaps she thinks she's got to carry on like that because the old bat's not here yet." Agnes was quite shocked at hearing herself think that.
"You do things our way here, all right," said Nanny.
"The, king did explain it all to me, said the pastor. Do you have anything for a headache? I'm afraid I..."
"You put the key in one hand and let her grip the crown with the other," Nanny Ogg went on.
"Yes, he did explain..."
"Then you tell her what her name is, and her mum's name and her dad's name, mumbling a bit over the latter if the mum ain't sure."
"Nanny, this is royalty."
"Ah! I could tell you stories, girl. And then see you give her to me, and I tell her too, and then I give her back, and you tell the people what her name is, and then you give her to me, and then I give her to her dad, and he takes her out through the doors and shows her to everyone. Everyone throws the rats in the air and shouts hurrah, and then it's all over by the drinks and horses, duvers, and finding your own hat. Start extemporising on the subject of sin, and it'll go hard with you."
"What is, your role, madam?"
"I'm the godmother."
Which god?
The young man was trembling slightly.
"It's from old Lancre," said Agnes hurriedly. "It means something like, good mother. It's all right. As witches, we believe in religious toleration."
"That's right," said Nanny Ogg, "but only for the right religious. So you watch your step."
The royal parents had reached the thrones. Magrat took her seat, and to Agnes's amazement gave her a sly wink. Verence didn't wink. He stood there and coughed loudly.
"I've got a pastil somewhere," said Nanny, her hand reaching towards her knicker leg.
Verence's eyes darted towards his throne. What had appeared to be a grey cushion rolled over, yawned, gave the king a brief glance, and started to wash itself.
"Oh, Greeball," said Nanny, "I was wondering where you'd got to."
"Could you please remove him, Mrs. Ogg?" said the king.
Agnes glanced at Magrat. The queen had half turned away with her elbow on the arm of the throne and her hand covering her mouth. Her shoulders were shaking. Nanny grabbed her cat off the throne.
"A cat can look at a king," she said.
"Not with that expression, I believe," said Verence.
He waved graciously at the assembled company just as the castle's clock began to strike midnight.
"Please begin, Reverend."
I did have a small suitable homily on the subject of, hope for the..."
The quite Reverend Oates began, but there was a grunt from Nanny, and he suddenly seemed to jerk forward slightly. He blinked once or twice, and his Adam's apple bobbed up and down.
"But, alas, I fear, we have no time," he concluded quickly.
Magrat leaned over and whispered something in her husband's ear. Agnes heard him say,
"Well, dear, I think we have to, whether she's here or not."
Sean scurried up, slightly out of breath, and his wig on sideways. He was carrying a cushion. On the faded velvet was the big iron key of the castle. Millie Chillum carefully handed the baby to the priest, who held it gingerly. It seemed to the royal couple that he suddenly started to speak very hesitantly. Behind him, Nanny Ogg's was an expression of extreme interest that was nevertheless made up of 100% artificial additives. They also had the impression that the poor man was suffering from frequent attacks of cramp.
"We are gathered here together in the sight of one another."
"Are you all right, Reverend?"
said the king, leaning forward.
"Never better, sir, I assure you," said Oates miserably. "And I therefore name thee, that is, you."
There was a deep, horrible pause. Glassy-faced, the priest handed the baby to Millie. Then he removed his hat, took a small scrap of paper from the lining, read it, moved his lips a few times as he said the words to himself, and then replaced the hat on his sweating forehead and took the baby again.
"I name you Esmeralda Margaret Note Spelling of Lancre."
The shocked silence was suddenly filled.
"Note spelling?" said Magrat and Agnes together.
Esmeralda? Said Nanny. The baby opened her eyes, and the doors swung back. Thank you.